Welcome to the November 2025 News Bulletin podcast for yacht and small craft marine surveyors, put together by the International Institute of Marine Surveying. Dear IIMS member and fellow maritime professionals, it seems to be report season. In recent weeks, I have been bombarded with a plethora of them reaching my inbox, more than seems normal for this time of the year from recollection. Sadly, like you, I cannot make the time to read and digest them all. But out of a sense of courtesy and duty, knowing how much time, effort and money has gone into resourcing and publishing them, I do scan read the most relevant ones, and occasionally I am rewarded for my patience with some essential nuggets of learned wisdom. One such recent report that grabbed my attention was the P&I Market Review 2025, produced by Lockton Marine. It offers a deep dive into the current status of the various P&I clubs, which is of interest. But it was the narrative in the attached press release to promote the review's launch that really hit home. It informs readers that the 2024-25 policy year saw the clubs report a collective underwriting loss of $312 million, reversing 2 years of surpluses and resulting in a net underwriting loss of $98 million over the past 3 years. It went on to say that P&I claims hit a 10-year peak with fires and EV cargo emerging as new flashpoints for shipowners. Net claims reached $3.1 billion, wow, yes, a staggering sum, up 25% year-on-year and 16% above the 5-year average. Several clubs have pointed to the rising threat of ship fires as an increasing driver of major losses. This reflects both the risks of an aging fleet and the growing prevalence of misdeclared or hazardous cargo, including electric vehicles. In addition, inflationary pressure on materials and labor, combined with greater damages arising from modern port upgrades, continues to drive up the cost of claims. Pool claims make 2024-25 one of the worst years on record, and the true cost may be even higher, meaning 2024-25 is on course to be one of the worst pool claim years on record. This is all rather depressing, but like me, perhaps you are not entirely surprised to hear this news. The major incidents and accidents, the type of which are referred to in the report, have been well documented in the shipping media. Only now is the true cost to insurers becoming known. And it does not take a mathematical genius to understand this situation is not sustainable at this level going forward. You can access the Lockton Marine report elsewhere in this news bulletin and draw your own conclusions. The other topic I wanted to share with you this month is a hugely controversial one that stopped me in my tracks. It surrounds decarbonisation, something of a buzzword, and potentially one that might lead me into slightly murky waters. I need to be careful not to get into political machinations, for as you know, IIMS is a strictly non-political organization. But the comments made by ABS Chairman and CEO, Christopher Wiernicke at the recent London Shipping Week were certainly thought-provoking and are worth digesting. In his address, he issued a stark warning that the International Maritime Organization's net zero framework is moving faster than the realities of shipping can cope with and manage. He has urged regulators to pause and reconsider their approach. Gosh, that's a bolt from the blue and a serious statement of intent from a highly respected leader of an influential organization. Continuing, he said, shipping and the IMO are on different trajectories. There is no clear pathway for green fuel availability, scalability and infrastructure support. LNG and biofuels are mission critical to any success and should not be overlooked, over-penalized or discarded in the net zero regulation. Quite frankly, achieving net zero for shipping by 2050 looks like a wild card. Is he right? Are his comments valid? It is not for me to comment particularly on Wiernicke's thoughts, rather only to put the information before you. But what does this mean for decarbonisation in shipping, and will anyone heed Wiernicke's comments, or will they fall on deaf ears? And what do other industry movers and shakers think? I pose more questions than there are answers for currently, I know. At the time of writing, I have been unable to find any response or comment from IMO, but you know things are serious when the head of ABS raises his head above the parapet to make such an observation. And finally this month, I had the absolute pleasure to spend time in Hamilton, Ontario with members and others from the North American maritime world at the EYIMS Canada Conference 2025. Not since before the pandemic have we hosted such an event in Canada. The conference attracted some top-notch speakers from across the country. We also managed to squeeze in a conference dinner as well. My thanks to the EYIMS Canada Committee for their hard work to organize the event, and to all those who either presented at the conference or attended in person or online. Survey well, Mike. In our first story, the UK Canal and River Trust, the charity that cares for 2,000 miles of waterways across England and Wales, has published its annual report for 2024-25, which sets out the scale of work undertaken to safeguard the nation's historic canals and their modern-day contribution to society. Over the year, and in the face of the rising cost of materials, additional environmental regulation and more extreme weather events, the Trust delivered wide-ranging maintenance to care for the canal network whilst prioritising the service the charity provides to boaters and local communities. More than £60 million was invested in winter maintenance across more than 200 projects, from installing 135 new handcrafted lock gates, to major inspections at landmark sites and repairs to centuries-old bridges, tunnels and washwalls. A further £21 million was spent upgrading 22 of the charity's 74 large, raised reservoirs. Alongside this, the Trust introduced its Better Boating Plan, developed with boaters and backed by £3 million of targeted investment to improve navigation. The charity's dredging program removed over 60,000 tons of material and improved over 40 miles of waterway, while over 6,800 tons of waste were collected, of which 98% was recycled or recovered through waste to energy. You can download the report via iaams.org.uk. Up next, at Grand Pavois 2025, the French government and the yachting industry published a joint roadmap outlining key priorities up to 2030. Today, boating and yachting are practiced by nearly 15 million people in France, including 4 million regular boaters. The industry employs some 150,000 people and is supported by over 5,500 companies covering construction, distribution and services. France is the world's second largest manufacturer of pleasure boats and number one in Europe, with the Beneteau Jeannou Group leading the way in sailboat production. The roadmap has three main components. First, with energy and environmental transition, the aim is to accelerate the decarbonization of the fleet and infrastructures. This involves the development of electric or hybrid propulsion, the use of alternative fuels, clean port certification, and the ramping up of the ship dismantling industry. Second, attractiveness and safety. The priorities include modernizing the yachting license, unifying the status of the vessel, better supervising rental platforms, and developing maritime education and professional training. The aim is both to attract new generations of sailors and to make sailing safer. And third, territories and practices. Nautical tourism. The roadmap aims to strengthen the role of marinas and ports as key players in the local economy, develop the nautical tourism offer, and better reconcile environmental protection zones and recreational boating activities. A national nautical observatory will be set up to monitor changes in usage and anticipate needs. What the roadmap changes for boaters. Marinas will gradually be certified as clean harbors and equipped to accommodate electric or hybrid boats. This means more charging stations and better waste and wastewater management. ZMELs, Zones de Moorage et d'Équipements Légers, will also be developed to limit the impact on the seabed and to offer alternatives to unauthorized anchoring. The boating license will evolve to include new aspects of safety and respect for the environment. Candidates will need to be trained in eco-gestures and risk prevention, in a context of increasing use of the sea. The roadmap calls for the distribution of carbon-free fuels, such as HVO, hydro-treated vegetable oil, in marinas. Boats equipped with internal combustion engines should gradually gain access to these solutions, in parallel with the growth of electric power. For our next report, Expedition Zero and Innovation Yachts have announced the launch of Eco Monera, a mineral fiber and bio-based resin composite material designed for marine use. The material is being promoted as the first of its kind, proven in real-world marine conditions. Unlike traditional composites, it is manufactured using circular production methods and uses mineral fiber and bio-based resin, making it fully recyclable and free from toxic chemicals. Other key characteristics of the material include a strength and weight performance exceeding fiberglass, corrosion-resistant, water-repellent, high-impact, and heat-resistance. Andrew Cowan, co-founder of Expedition Zero, commented, "This partnership brings us one step closer to our goal of building the world's most sustainable fleet." Eco Monera is a proven material that sets a new benchmark for marine sustainability, and we're proud to be first to market with this technology after rigorous testing. Next, at the Monaco Yacht Show, Royal Wieman unveiled Aera, a 50 meters, 164-foot, concept superyacht packed with edgy technologies such as a wing sail and fuel cell energy. Aera is another breakthrough for the Dutch shipyard, celebrated for building the world's first hybrid superyacht. In 2009, it delivered Ethereal, the world's first hybrid superyacht requiring only a fraction of the energy comparable yachts need. It features a rondel wing sail, a retractable propulsion system, rondel captive mooring winches, an energy storage system comprising compressed hydrogen, a fuel cell, and batteries, rondel hydrogenerators, variable speed generators, HVO biodiesel fuel tanks, and laser exterior lighting. A wing sail mimics the shape and function of an airplane wing to harness wind more efficiently than traditional sails. It is a variable camber, aerodynamic structure mounted in place of conventional fabric sails. Designed like an airplane wing, it produces lift on either side depending on wind direction. A wing sail offers better performance in all wind directions, especially when reaching on beam and downwind courses. In our next segment, Lloyd's Register has released the latest edition of its award-winning Fuel for Thought series, highlighting the role of biofuels in the superyacht sector's energy transition. Fuel for Thought, Biofuels for Yachts, launched during the Monaco Yacht Show, positions hydrotreated vegetable oil, HVO, as a practical, drop-in alternative to conventional marine fuels. With mounting pressure to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, particulate matter and sulfur oxides, HVO is emerging as a leading drop-in solution. It delivers significant environmental benefits without compromising performance or requiring major technical modifications, making it an attractive alternative for yacht owners, captains and management companies. This edition of Fuel for Thought explores the opportunities and limitations of biofuels for use in yachting. It provides practical guidance on safety, toxicity, bunkering logistics, fuel quality and regulatory frameworks. The report also examines life cycle emissions, market demand, economic factors and the supply chain, alongside insights into engine compatibility and nitrogen oxides emissions. The analysis shows that biofuels share similarities with fossil fuels, allowing the use of established industry practices operating with petroleum distillates. HVO, produced through hydrotreatment, can directly replace marine gas oil, offering better stability and combustion. Its drop-in capabilities enable ships to cut carbon emissions cost-effectively, even if they can't be fully retrofitted for fuels like methanol or ammonia. The Fuel for Thought, Biofuels for Yachts report also confirms that safety requirements for transporting, handling, and bunkering liquid biofuels are generally similar to those for fossil-derived fuels. While the report underlines the role of biofuels as a practical near-term step, it stresses that they are not a complete solution. A wider strategy, including energy efficiency, sustainable design and alternative propulsion technologies, will be vital for long-term progress. You can apply to download the report at lr.org. Up next, the 2025 Superyacht UK Young Designer Competition has once again proven to be a showcase of creativity, vision, and boundary-pushing innovation. Held during the Southampton International Boat Show, this year's competition brought together some of the brightest emerging talents in design to compete for top honours. The competition is sponsored by LA Marine and supported by event partners Princess Yachts, Sunseeker, Cockwells, Marina Projects, Winch Design, RWD, and Olesinski. The 8 shortlisted students, from second and third year undergraduate and master's programmes, were challenged with a live design brief set by the judging panel, which included Justin Olesinski from Olesinski, Douglas Hine from RWD, Jeff Holgrave from Marina Projects Limited, Ewan Foster from Sunseeker, Emily Naumann from Winch Design and the 2019 competition winner, James Shakespeare, who now works in the surfacing design team at Princess Yachts. This year's brief was to design a 48 to 50 meters family-friendly charter yacht for a couple based in Monaco, on the edge of the Pelagos Sanctuary Marine Protected Area. The designers had to consider environmental restrictions, future-proof sustainable features, and the yacht's full life cycle. They were also asked to design a matching tender and present an exterior profile, rough general arrangement, master cabin concept, and ideas to ensure the yacht would appeal to the charter market. Jack Franix, who is studying yacht design and production at Solent University, claimed first place, earning a one-month internship at Sunseeker. James Horrocks, studying automotive and transport design at Staffordshire University, took second place, receiving a one-week internship at Olesinski, and Ed Taylor, who recently finished studying product design at Bournemouth University, was awarded third place, with a one-week internship at Cockwell's Modern and Classic Boat Building, part of the Pendennis Group. Next, the five winners of the inaugural Blue Wake Awards were revealed at the Monaco Yacht Show during the grand opening night at La Meridine Beach Plaza. The ceremony hosted 400 guests from the yachting industry, Four companies and one yacht exhibited at this year's Monaco Yacht Show were recognized for their sustainable solutions in the superyacht sector. The awards, which highlight developments in yacht design, engineering and the onboard experience, were created with the support of the Water Revolution Foundation as part of the show's wider Blue Wake program. Tycoon received recognition in the tenders and water toys category for its H1 hydrogen propulsion system. Designed in Italy and ready for production, the system combines performance with reduced environmental impact. Taiping was recognized in the luxury products and services category for its biophilic program, a line of rugs made from undyed, biodegradable fibers including wool, silk, flax and jute. The program reduces water use by 60% and energy consumption by 85% by eliminating the dyeing process, while also lowering carbon emissions. Diesel earned distinction in the nautical supplier category for its sustainable yachting fuel, which is produced through low-energy green chemistry processes. The fuel reduces CO2 emissions by up to 93% compared to conventional marine fuels. San Lorenzo received recognition in the refit and builder shipyard category for introducing the first superyacht with reformer fuel cell systems, developed with Siemens Energy. The system uses hydrogen from green methanol to provide up to 100 kilowatt of emission-free electricity at anchor, lowering annual emissions by 20-30%. Silver Yachts also received the special jury award for its catamaran reduce. The vessel is built entirely in aluminium for recyclability and features a low-resistance hull by Espen Eno International. Its design improves fuel efficiency and range while reducing environmental impact through the use of recycled and recyclable materials. For our next report, the U.S. National Transportation Safety Board has inoperable battery management systems was the probable cause of a fire on yacht flagship last year. What happened? On April 28, 2024, at 10:31 local time, a fire started on board the uncrewed yacht flagship while it was docked at an enclosed bay of a shipyard on the Miami River in Miami, Florida. Shoreside firefighters moved the vessel to a nearby seawall, where they extinguished the fire. The vessel eventually sank at the seawall. There were no injuries, and no pollution was reported. The flagship was declared a total loss, valued at $5 million. Investigation. The NTSB report said the yacht flagship was docked with no personnel on board at a shipyard on the Miami River in Miami when an explosion and fire occurred. Shoreside firefighters moved the vessel to a nearby seawall, where they extinguished the fire. The vessel eventually sank at the seawall. The video from the security camera at the shipyard showed an explosion at 10:31 that originated from the hatch for the space below the floor where the 24-volt lithium-ion battery bank was located. The explosion expanded from the hatch and into the interior of the vessel. Following the explosion, smoke and fire were visible on the flagship, and the fire continued to grow, eventually engulfing the entire vessel. Investigators later identified extensive damage to the aluminum deck and hull structure in the area around and above the location of the 24-volt lithium-ion battery bank. Based on the security video and the location of the most extensive fire damage, a lithium-ion battery cell within the 24-volt battery bank was most likely the initiating source of the explosion and fire. Since the vessel's arrival in the US, the BMSS for the battery banks of the 24-volt system and the 348-volt battery systems were inoperable. They did not safely monitor and maintain the charge level of the batteries. This problem with the BMSS was not immediately resolved. In the interim, the vessel manufacturer, shipyard personnel, an electrician, and the vessel owner's representative developed a new procedure to increase the charging speed of the lithium-ion batteries by bypassing the BMS of each battery bank. A wire was attached to bypass each BMS so the batteries could be manually charged at a faster pace by an external charger. As a result, the charge level within the vessel battery banks was not automatically maintained by the BMSS, and, due to an unidentified electrical drain within the vessel, the batteries became fully discharged, 0% charge, on several occasions for extended periods. In addition, routinely charging the batteries using a portable battery charger could have resulted in overcharging, since the external battery charger was not connected to and monitored by ABMS and the battery charge level was instead monitored by personnel at the shipyard. Therefore, the practice of externally charging the lithium-ion batteries without resolving the BMS issues resulted in fluctuations in the level of charge on the battery bank. Extensive fluctuation in the level of charge within the batteries may have caused one of the cells to become unstable, eventually resulting in thermal runaway. A thermal runaway occurs when a battery cell overheats and combusts. It is a chemical reaction that can occur to any type of battery cell if it is damaged, shorted, overheated, defective, deep discharged, or overcharged. The heat produced from a thermal runaway of a lithium-ion battery cell can exceed 1,100 degrees Fahrenheit, which can easily cause the adjoining cells of the same battery bank to ignite, as well as cause significant damage to aluminum structures. Lithium-ion battery cell explosions are typically caused by a thermal runaway. Therefore, the explosion on the flagship was likely the result of one of the cells of the 24-volt battery bank undergoing a thermal runaway. Probable cause: the National T. In our next segment, a dive support vessel, Jean Elaine, which grounded in the Scotland in 2024 was not certified for operation at the time of the accident, said a report published by the UK Marine Accident Investigation Branch. What happened? On the 22nd of July 2024, the dive support vessel Jean Elaine grounded on a falling tide in St. Peter's Pool in the Orkney Islands, Scotland. The vessel developed a severe port list and suffered water ingress. Despite efforts to save the vessel, it was ultimately abandoned. There were no injuries or fatalities. At the time of the accident, Jean Elaine was not certified for operation and the skipper's certificate of competence had expired. Heriot Watt University, which was using the vessel for a research project, had not verified validity of the vessel or crew certification before its use. The investigation identified that the accident occurred due to a lack of adequate planning and ineffective communication between the skipper and research team. The incident also highlighted the importance of effective oversight, risk management, and adherence to regulatory requirements when operating vessels in support of educational or scientific activities. Jean Elaine. Jean Elaine was constructed in 1956 as a wooden fishing trawler. In 1994, Jean Elaine was converted to a dive support vessel for recreational and research diving in the Orkneys. In May 2019, Jean Elaine was surveyed to the requirements of Marine Guidance Note, MGN 280M, small vessels in commercial use for sport or pleasure, workboats and pilot boats, alternative construction standards published by the Maritime and Coast Guard Agency. The vessel was certified as an Area Category 2 workboat, permitting it to carry up to 12 passengers a maximum of 60 nautical miles from a safe haven. The certificate was valid until the 28th of April 2024. On the 29th of April 2024, Jean Elaine was examined out of the water for the renewal of its certificate. The examination was carried out by MECAL Limited, a certifying authority authorized by the MCA to survey and certify vessels under MGN 280M. The survey identified sprung and rotten hull planking and the certificate held by Jean Elaine was not renewed. The suspension of certificate notice issued by MECAL Limited to the skipper of Jean Elaine stated that, while this suspension notice is in force, the vessel must not operate commercially. Jean Elaine did not hold a valid certificate for the voyage undertaken on the day of the grounding. Safety issues included the following. There was no passage plan to support the safe navigation of the vessel. The risk to Jean Elaine from its passage into St. Peter's Pool was not identified. There was a lack of coordination of the activities of the vessel and the dive team. Jean Elaine was not certified for operation at the time of the accident. The poor condition of Jean Elaine's hull likely contributed to its failure following the grounding. Heriot Watt University did not ensure that Jean Elaine was appropriately certified before the expedition. You can read the full report via our website. And for our final story, luxury yacht builder Sunseeker has given an update on its plans to make some of its staff redundant. The company had announced plans to cut 200 jobs in June this year, around 10% of its workforce. At the time, it was said redundancies could affect roles in support, leadership, and management functions. Now, its plans for management restructuring is set to create 44 new positions, and compulsory redundancies have been reduced to 50. Some of the company's staff had taken voluntary redundancies, and so the number of proposed compulsory redundancies has reduced to 50. In Christmas 2024, Sunseeker temporarily had laid off 91 of its staff due to restrictions in its supply chain. These affected workers were paid 50% of their hourly rate during their layoff period and returned to work on the 27th of January this year. That's all we have for this month. Thanks for listening.